is case number 79208, Nevada State Education Association versus Clark County Education Association. We have Ms. Leonard representing the appellant and Mr. Jacobs representing the respondent. Ms. Leonard, would you like to reserve some time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, you may do so, and I'll kind of remind you when we get there on the clock. I assume you both can see the clock okay on the video screen. And again, for the record, Justices Silver and Gibbons in the Las Vegas courtroom, Justice Stiglitz in her Reno home, like that. So we will go ahead and proceed, and Ms. Leonard on behalf of her client.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Debbie Leonard on behalf of the appellants. The district court disregarded one of the most fundamental aspects of a membership organization, and that is that the organization functions with and is entitled to receive dues from its members. Whether the organization is a golf club, a professional association, a gym, or a union, it has the right to receive all dues that accrue for the duration of an individual's membership. It is undisputed that the Clark County teachers, whose dues are at issue here, were members of both the National Education Association and the Nevada State Education Association until April 25th, 2018, which is when the local affiliate, Clark County Education Association, voted to disaffiliate from the unified membership structure. Until that date, the teachers paid their NSEA and NEA dues and received the rights and benefits of membership, which included, among others, participation in financial services, investment, consumer discount, and insurance programs, educators' employment liability protection, leadership and professional growth opportunities and access to a professional library, and lobbying on behalf of educators at the state and national levels, just to name a few. The problem here is that CCEA, which was NSEA and NEA's collection and transmittal agent, withheld $4.1 million in NSEA and NEA membership dues deducted from teachers' paychecks from September 1st, 2017 through the April 25th, 2018 disaffiliation. In that the teachers remained NSEA and NEA members during that time, the court can decide this case in appellant's favor on their conversion claim alone. But whether the court decides the case under tort or contract principles, the record and the law are clear that the CCEA had no authority to retain the NEA and NSEA dues and has no authority to give those dues back to the teachers.
Ms. Leonard, why wasn't the clear intent and the desire to withdraw from the contract pursuant to the contractual provisions, why wasn't that successful? Well, why shouldn't we, what more did they need to do in September, before September, to say, we don't want to be, you know, involved in other unions?
Well, Your Honor, so I just want to make sure we distinguish between the different contracts. There was a service agreement, and there was an addendum to that was a transmittal agreement. And the termination of the service agreement, first of all, it was only between NSEA and CCEA. NEA was not even a party to it. But the bylaws are what govern the relationship between the unions, and the affiliation structure is what mandates the payment of membership dues. And so it's clear from the record, CCEA admits it, that there was no disaffiliation until April 25th, 2018. So until that time, the members remained members of NSEA and NEA. It was not until April 25th, 2018, when CCEA first had to vote to amend its own bylaws to disaffiliate, and then actually took a vote to disaffiliate from the national and state affiliates. So the court need not even get to the issue of notice of termination of the agreement, because backing up, again, as I stated in my intro, that the conversion claim alone and the contract obligations that existed by way of the bylaws, those were enough from the undisputed facts in this case that the court can see that summary judgment should have been awarded to NSEA and NEA and not to CCEA. I want to talk a little bit more about that the dues belong to NSEA and NEA because the district court really got this wrong. So the district court reached the conclusion that because CCEA terminated the service agreement, which again was only between NSEA and CCEA, and the district court also concluded that the attached transmittal agreement was terminated, that NSEA and NEA purportedly have no rights to the dues their members paid after that date. But the legal NSEA and NEA's legal interest in the dues does not depend on their agent transmitting them. In fact, the record is peppered with statements of CCEA's representatives after August 31st, 2017, that confirm that the dues belong to NSEA and NEA. And we cite these in our opening brief on pages 14 through 15 and 47 through 48. And they include the affidavits of CCEA's executive director, correspondence of CCEA's executive director and president and counsel, CCEA's accounting documents, and even the minutes of the executive board meeting regarding the vote to place the NSEA and NEA dues in an escrow account. These all describe the dues as being those of NSEA and NEA, yet the district court disregarded them. A critical piece to remember here is that the teachers' membership did not change on September 1st. On August 31st, 2017, the teachers were members of NSEA and NEA. And on September 1st, 2017, after CCEA's claimed termination of the service and transmittal agreements, the teachers remained members of NSEA and NEA, and they did as they did on September 2nd, September 3rd, all the way through for the next 8 months until CCEA voted to disaffiliate from the national and state affiliates. So the U.S. Supreme Court has been clear that membership in a labor union constitutes a contract between the member and the union. And CCEA admits in its answer in this case that CCEA members paid dues through the payroll deductions to CCEA, NSEA, and NEA, and that in signing the membership enrollment form, and CCEA referred to this as CCEA, NSEA, and NEA membership enrollment form, and the payroll deduction authorization, that they are informed that they're becoming members of all three unions. And the materials that were provided to the teachers with that membership form clearly show that membership in one union meant membership in all three and described the benefits that were associated with each affiliated union. Yet in granting summary judgment for CCEA on the conversion claim, the district court inexplicably concluded that the form is only between CCEA and its members. CCEA's own admissions indicate the contrary. So in light of these undisputed facts in the record, CCEA's refusal to turn over NEA and NSEA's dues constitutes conversion as a matter of law, such that summary judgment should have been granted to NSEA and NEA. Let me turn briefly to the issue of breach of contract, because Justice Stiglitz mentioned the dues transmittal agreement, which we claim has been breached. But backing up to the higher level, the breach of contract also occurred regarding NSEA and NEA bylaws, which CCEA admits in the record that were binding until the disaffiliation. So importantly, whether there was a transmittal obligation exists in the affiliation relationship as indicated in the bylaws. How that occurred was what we see in the dues transmittal agreement. So if you look at the bylaws, NEA bylaws say that a local affiliate shall have the responsibility for transmitting state and association dues to state affiliates on a contractual basis. The NSEA bylaws state that an affiliate must have a dues transmittal contract as part of its affiliation obligation. Now, the district court, well, CCA argues and the district court accepted that these are not CCEA obligations, but rather those of NSCA and NEA. But that should be rejected for a number of reasons. First, it's not a reasonable interpretation of the contract and leads to the absurd result that we have here, where the members remained members of the affiliated unions until April 25th, 2018. But somehow the NSCA and NEA are not entitled to the dues during that time. The unified membership structure simply does not work unless all affiliated unions are receiving their dues.
Ms. Leonard, just briefly, to the extent that the contracts govern these relationships, the transmittal agreement and the service agreement, the service agreement contract says you can terminate it 30 days before. So wouldn't that be superfluous if we just decide that that means nothing? You can terminate it, but you're still bound by both that, and if we decide that they also successfully terminated the transmittal agreement. If that's the decision, then why isn't that sufficient?
Your Honor, first of all, an important piece of the transmittal agreement is Section 5, which requires that any amendments to the bylaws are automatically incorporated into the transmittal agreement, such that CCA could not terminate the transmittal agreement without having a successor agreement in place. So the CCEA breached the bylaws simply by purporting to unilaterally terminate the transmittal agreement without having another one in place. And this isn't an ongoing perpetual obligation, because as CCEA did, it disaffiliated in April 25th, 2018, ending its obligation. So I think that's a really important piece to remember. And I think I need to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal unless you have additional questions.
Okay, you may do so. Mr. Jacobs.
Thank you. Thank you, Justice. Thank you, Your Honors, for the ability to appear remotely. Andrew Jacobs for CCEA. May it please the court. Counsel, with respect, has offered you too narrow of an analytic frame. And there are two things that need to be taken account of here that are in play, giving credit to their position and the need to resolve all of these issues together. The first one is whether we validly terminated the dues transmittal agreement. That's the first issue. And the second one is, if we did, can there still be a zombie entitlement to $4 million of dues where they have not appealed and there is no dispute, the fact found by Judge Early that there was no performance by them after September 1, 2017? And the answer to the first question is a resounding yes, we were able to terminate the dues transmittal agreement. There were three different notices of terminating the service agreement that attaches it, but focusing really hard on the third one, the one transmitted, the final one of August 3rd, there are seven distinct references in it to dues remittance, the dues contract, the dues transmittal agreement. So it's just all over the face of that notice. If there is a requirement of terminating it separately, as if it existed sort of separate instead of organically thatched together with the service agreement, which is the far better reading, we still did it. We did, and there are seven different references in Mr. Velardita's letter, and it says at the top, under the date, the Ray Line, final notice, contract for dues remittance. So it's really hard to know how much harder you could try to notify them that you were doing it. My friend said just a moment before resting their remarks that the termination was a breach because it was unilateral, but the dues transmittal agreement expressly provides for unilateral termination. It can't be a breach. It says in Section 6, unless it is terminated in writing by either party before September 1. That's all it requires. We did that. And unilateral just means either side can do it by themselves, and we did. So we have terminated the dues transmittal agreement, and very clearly, with three notices, we terminated the service agreement that continued it in force but added to it certain service obligations. So there are three different notices here. It's really unequivocal. And also, with respect to their argument about the bylaws, I think there's a very important point here, because they've done a good job of arguing it from a technical lawyering standpoint, but they're eliding critical language that I would really urge Your Honors to focus on in looking at their bylaws argument, specifically Section 5, Amendment of Agreement. It doesn't say the bylaws all flow in to the agreement. That is absolutely not what it says. That's an overstated misconstruction of it because we're not looking specifically enough at the words. The words say that when there's an amendment to the bylaws, it shall prevail when there is, quote, the conflicting provision in this agreement. They never say in their briefing that there's a conflicting provision in the dues transmittal agreement to be obliterated. I guess the conflicting provision, although counsel just said she wasn't saying this, would be that it's a perpetual term. Because the only way there's a conflict between her reading of her bylaws and this document is if you say that this document improperly omits to have a perpetual renewal term. Then and only then do you fashion a conflict. But that conflict fails under Nevada law because this court has taught in Bell that we do not go with perpetual contracts unless there's an extraordinarily expressed statement of desire to do so. And this one confers a unilateral chance for either party to opt out every single year. In fact, it's very unusual in the annals of labor union contracts. If you look at contracts, you know, for Teamsters, AFL-CIO, other stuff, they never have this one-year renewal thing. It's weird, and it confers a great degree of autonomy upon CCEA. But that's how American contract law works. If you want to make a contract with your local that every single year it has the right to walk away, that's what two contracting parties in a regime of freedom of contract can, and in this case did do. And that's what this court should give effect to, is that decision. Now, there are also a couple points I'd like to emphasize in rebuttal to counsel's argument, and I did mention this, but counsel's first minute and a half of argument was basically saying the reason that there should be this, what I call, just to be sort of jokey about it, a zombie entitlement, sort of a living entitlement to dues, even though there's no correlative contractual benefit to our members, is counsel said basically what amounted to CCEA teachers were entitled to, I guess you could say, the dignitary benefits of formal affiliation of CCEA with NSEA and NEA. But if you look in the record at page 1027, and that's Judge Early's December 18, 2018 ruling, at paragraph 34, there's an unappealed finding that no services were rendered. And that makes this analytically clean, and it makes it a much easier case than it otherwise would be. And so counsel basically, having not appealed that, was trying to argue around that by supplying a substance which, having not appealed it, NSEA may not do. They're basically saying, well, really, you were getting some kind of mutuality here. It wasn't really a naked $4.1 million grab here. But there were no services rendered. That is undisputed. And so if you go with our analysis, and we've argued it in the brief, and I've explained why there was a valid termination under a very permissive termination provision, then the question becomes, what about that $4.1 million? They say, you know, you didn't disaffiliate until April 25, 2018. But that really misses the mark because when they unilaterally stopped performance on September 1, which is a rock that their argument has to flow around, you really can't get with the doctrine of consideration, with the doctrine of mutuality, to a place where they have an entitlement to $4.1 million. Counsel said, please give it to us based on our conversion claim. But conversion, you know, requires equity. There's nothing equitable about taking $4 million for services it's undisputed you did not render. There's no ownership interest in taking $4.1 million for something that you're not entitled to because the dues transmittal agreement is gone. And it is, you know, it is in candor a self-serving theory of the dues transmittal agreement as well. The bylaws, and I'd like to again focus in on the language because contracts are, of course, all about language and structure, and not sort of general statements about purpose. The district court was exactly right to say that the obligation relating to dues transmittal contract lay with them and not with us. And the briefing emphasizes to your honors that Section 3 of NSEA's bylaws say NSEA shall affiliate a local association when it meets the minimum standards, and the last one is have a dues transmittal contract. But the thing I'd like to call out to you, language-wise, that was not really called out as clearly in the briefing, there's a further Section 5 just down the page, and it says NSEA local affiliates must. So when everybody drafted this contract, they said, here are the things NSEA must do. Here are the things local must do. And they keep saying the bylaws require us to have a permanent dues transmittal agreement, but Section 5 says NSEA locals must, and there's a colon, and it doesn't say anything about having a permanent dues transmittal agreement. And there's a further flaw linguistically and just sort of logically in their parsing, a little bit too generous toward themselves, of the NSEA bylaws, which is to say that you have a dues transmittal contract is fair. It doesn't say to have a perpetual one. the one that they had the whole time had this termination provision. They had a dues transmittal contract. Contracts can have termination provisions. So they affiliated with us when the condition properly was met that there be a contract with a dues transmittal agreement. There was, and it had a termination agreement. And they knew that the whole time, and they should be stopped or barred and not heard in this court to complain that, well, really, it had to be a permanent one. We never said that. We never bargained for that. The law disfavors permanent contracts, but it bootstrapped in through our bylaws, and the only way you get it there is through misreading the conflict language in Section 5 Amendment, which says you have to have an express conflict. There is no express conflict between these bylaws and the 1978 agreement. There just isn't one. So you never even get to the point of importing it. But if you get to the point of trying to import it, their thing doesn't say perpetual. And if you get to the point of importing it, it's an obligation on them and not on us. And there's a separate section about obligations on us. We have some. We have to have bylaws. We have to have officers. We have to send delegates around. Nothing there about, y'all better make sure you don't have some sort of temporary dues transmittal agreement. That would be disfavored. That's the place in contract law when in a regime of freedom of contract you bargain freely, you'd put that in. And there's a heading for us, and the obligation that they would manufacture now in this court was not present. It's not the bargain. So, and their argument, too, on this, there's a different way they say it. I apologize for the repetition of my argument. I think maybe both parties could have given you 20 instead of 60-page briefs. It might have been nicer. There seems to be some internal parallelisms running in all the arguments on both our sides. I'll plead guilty to my half of that. But there is a deep circularity because they say that you can only withdraw when you have a successor agreement in place. That's the argument at pages 29 to 31 of their opening brief. So how does that work? You get to withdraw, but only if you aren't withdrawing. I mean, I think that sort of shows you that our interpretation of their bylaws as being too self-serving and literally incorrect is one that cannot stand.
Mr. Jacobs, if I may, just briefly. So what effect... If the contracts had been successfully terminated, what effect is the disaffiliation vote? Why do we have the members then disaffiliate? Is that a ratification of the prior action of the board? What legal effect does that take?
It definitely ratifies the prior action for sure, and only in the context where they've stopped performing is that going to be resolved, I think, logically in our favor. If they continued performing, I'd be in a bad state arguing to you. So, but there are two things about the disaffiliation. I think the record doesn't make clear why we were still affiliated. And I think it also doesn't make crystal clear, unless one parses every page of it, why we then disaffiliated. The reason we then disaffiliated is because they were seeking a trusteeship, essentially a receivership, right in August of 2018, where they were going to take control and say we were a miscreant local group and we were disserving the members and they were going to take over, and then we wouldn't be allowed to rule ourselves because we wouldn't be entitled and NSCA would have a receivership over us. So it was then necessary to disaffiliate. But to the prior point, why were we still affiliated? And if you go back to 2017, when Mr. Vallardita was trying as the executive director to negotiate a change, they said, you know, we're really bound by NSCA guidelines. We can't negotiate a new agreement with you until after the new membership term starts, until after September 15, 2017. And as our original pleadings make clear, Mr. Vallardita and CCEA were still trying to save the relationship. So we terminated the dues transmittal agreement. We terminated the service agreement. They accepted that through conduct and stopped performing. So everybody's not performing. There is no present correlative set of obligations in the year. But we just sort of kept the door open for negotiating purposes so we could try, given that their offer to us in the correspondence that led to termination was, you know, we'll deal with you, but after September 15 of 17, that's why we stayed in. And we did try to negotiate them, albeit unsuccessfully, Justice Stiglitz. So I think that it's also good at this point, because it sort of themes back to the colloquy we just had, to go back to my friend's comments in her argument relating to how we admitted, basically, you know, we admitted the bylaws apply, and using judicial admissions. And I think what they really did was they're really privileging alternative pleading to a very high degree, and a degree that's not reasonable. And frankly, the example I just gave really illustrates that point well. I was talking about how in April they were trying to take over CCEA, which would give them the dues and prevent us from concluding the disaffiliation ultimately. And at that point, if you look in the record at pages 270 to 278, we were seeking an injunction to stop them from doing that. So in the injunction, we said, we're going to be irreparably harmed because the bylaws are asserted to control us. They are asserted to bind us, and that will irreparably harm us by destroying our democratic governance and decision-making process as a union. That's sort of gunpoint judicial admission, if I ever saw it. And that's one of the ones they argue in their sequence of judicial admissions as to how, you know, we were in this quandary. Another one is they argue about the original pleadings in the case around September 12, amended complaint September 19. They're in the first 50 pages of the record. And those likewise are at a point where we had not obtained the district court's order eventually saying that we properly had essentially conducted a union divorce. So at that point, we still were stuck with, until we have a judge's ruling that we have that divorce, then we're going to say the bylaws bind them and they're breaching their fiduciary duties by all the failings that led us to terminate. So the admissions, air quotes, that they cite are really us using the fact that the parties hadn't been judicially determined to have been separated in relations. And we were pivoting from that in September 2017 to say, therefore, they're breaching fiduciary duties. Therefore, we get to walk away. Please give us an order. And those pleadings, they're supposedly admissions, all say at the end, in paragraph 3 of the prayer for relief, we pray for an order that determines that we're disaffiliated, that we have no contract with them. So we're asking for that. We have to show the breach under the current bylaws to show that. And likewise, in April of 2018, we're trying to help ourselves get away, and we're sort of having this, you know, gunpoint judicial admission. And again, it's not really, you know, like a judicial estoppel like they would posit it. It's not like we took a position the bylaws bound, and then we obtain some benefit from it such that we have to be barred forever from saying we weren't really bound. The bylaws simply, perforce, move along with the rest of the analysis. So I see that my time is running down. We terminated the dues transmittal agreement, 7 references in the third letter. It's inextricably bound together, even under their case, Oldcastle. If the two agreements that are related are kind of thatched together and comprise one unitary thing, they should be read together. Their cases and our cases aren't meaningfully different. And one thing also on the subject of termination, their case Cedar Rapids from the Eighth Circuit, they say you need a really strict termination. It actually says notice is to be liberally construed with the intent and purpose of the parties. That's abundantly clear. I'm out of time. Unless there are other questions, I thank you, Justices, for your time.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Jacobs? Okay. Hearing none, Ms. Leonard, you may go ahead and proceed with your rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. I think one of the most important things my colleague just said in his arguments, that if NSEA and NEA had continued performing after September 1st, 2017, that his position, his client's position, would fail. And I think that's a very important point to highlight, because the obligations that he contends that NSEA and NEA did not continue to perform on is a very limited finding, and it's in reference to NSEA no longer performing on the service agreement obligations after that date because the service agreement had terminated. That has nothing to do with the benefits that accrued to the members of NSEA and NSEA, and NEA, the individual teachers, who, if the court looks at pages 1045 through 1046 of the record, will see a large list of benefits that the teachers were obtaining. And there is nothing in the record to suggest that they stopped obtaining those benefits after September 1st, 2017. So my colleague on the other side is really is taking some serious liberties with the record, because that is not what the record says, that individual teachers stopped receiving benefits from the national and state affiliates. They continue to receive their benefits. There's nothing in the record to indicate otherwise. And NSEA.
Ms. Leonard, is there anything affirmative that says they were getting these benefits? I mean, you said the record doesn't show they didn't get these benefits. Is there anything in the record affirmative outside of the judge's finding that they received other benefits?
Well, Your Honor, I just cited the pages of that indicate the benefits they were receiving. There's the, again, this was decided on summary judgment, And it is for the other side to show that the individual teachers were not receiving benefits, and there's nothing to indicate that they were not receiving the benefits that they were paying dues for. And the membership obligation continued until disaffiliation. I want to just to touch on that point about your question about that this was simply just ratification. First of all, there had to be a vote by the membership of CCEA to amend its own bylaws before it could disaffiliate. There are all sorts of obligations within CCEA's bylaws and the state and national affiliates regarding disaffiliation. This could not simply be done based on CCEA's statement that it was unilaterally terminating the service agreement. First of all, the service agreement, NEA wasn't even a party to it. So how could NEA's rights to receive dues be terminated by CCEA saying that it was no longer wanted to participate in the service agreement by which, it was getting services from NSEA? That is a very limited finding. It's a very limited scope of the of facts, and I encourage the court to look at the actual language of the service agreement and what was terminated vis-a-vis the actual membership of the individual teachers. Thank you, unless you have other questions.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Leonard. Mr. Jacobs, thank you both for your excellent arguments as usual. We appreciate them very much, and your briefs as well. We'll take the case under submission at this time, and we'll be in recess till 1:30 this afternoon.